Republic of Iran.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here, we enlighten you with the ayah 61 of Surah Yunus, recited by Ahmad Mirza Devaghifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. وَمَا تَكُونُ فِي شَأْنٍ وَمَا تَتْلُو مِنْهُ مِنْ قُرْآنٍ وَمَا تَتْلُو وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك وما يعزب عن ربك من مثقال ذرة في الأرض ولا في السماء ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أصغر من ذلك ولا أكبر إلا في كتاب مبين صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And you are not engaged in any affair, nor do you recite concerning it any portion of the Quran, nor do you do any work, but we are witnesses over you when you enter into it. And there does not lie concealed from your Lord the weight of an atom in the earth or in the heaven, nor anything less than that, nor greater. But it is in a clear book.
The headline, Sarah warns against any possible adventurism by Israel against Iran, saying it reserves the right to respond to any threats from the Zionist regime. The Secretary General of Lebanon says, General Qassem Soleimani was a resistance icon who thwarted U.S. plots in West Asia. And also on our headlines, Russia updates the number of its servicemen killed in Ukraine's missile attack to 89, blaming the strike on unauthorized use of cell phones by its forces. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations warns against any military adventurism by Israel, saying that Tehran reserves the right to respond to Israeli threats when necessary. Amir Saidi Ravani made the remarks in a letter addressed to the UN Secretary General and the Security Council Chief. He said Tel Aviv's threats to use force against Iran's nuclear facilities are a violation of international law and the UN Charter. He said such threats are made as Iran's peaceful nuclear program is monitored by the UN nuclear watchdog. Yiravani highlighted Israel's previous acts of terror against Iran, in particular the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists. He also warned that the regime would face the consequences for such crimes. Iran has strongly condemned the storming of Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israel's newly appointed far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gavir. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said, "The desecration of the holy Palestinian sites is a clear violation of international law." He said a unified Al-Quds will always be the capital of Palestine. Kanani warned against acts of adventurism and provocation by Israel's new cabinet. He said the liberation of Palestine is a top priority for the Islamic world. Israeli Minister Ben-Gavir entered the mosque compound under the protection of troops. Early on Tuesday, he reportedly had the green light from the regime's prime minister for his deprecating act. And people have rallied in the southeastern Iranian city of Kerman to pay tribute to Lieutenant General Qassem Soleimani on his third assassination anniversary. Kerman, where the general's body was laid to rest, hosted a special ceremony to honor his memory. Rallies and commemorative ceremonies for the anti-terror icon were also held nationwide. General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the deputy head of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces, were killed in a U.S. drone strike near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. Back then, a U.N. Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial killings condemned the strike as a violation of international law. Iran has called the general's assassination state terrorism and has vowed to take revenge on masterminds and perpetrators of the drone strike in due course. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has praised Lieutenant General Qassem Soleimani as a symbol of resistance and to fight against terrorism and global arrogance. Raisi was addressing a huge crowd that gathered in the capital, Tehran, to commemorate the third assassination anniversary of General Soleimani. He said the anti-terror icon exposed the myth that the United States is an invincible power. The Iranian president underlined that remembering General Soleimani sends a message of hope to freedom seekers around the world. Raisi called Soleimani a unifying force for the Iranian society, adding that the slain general is now dear to millions of people globally. The president reiterated that Iran will never forget the assassination of the iconic figure and will definitely take revenge on those involved in his killing.
Iran has commemorated the third martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani. People from different walks of life descended on the Imam Khomeini Musalla in central Tehran to pay tribute to General Qasem Soleimani. The slain commander was a man who was widely revered as a national hero for all his efforts in the fight against terrorism and global arrogance. Addressing a ceremony, Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, said the message of attending the commemoration of Qasem Soleimani to all free men and women is that they should stand up and resist arrogance and block the way of oppressors and arrogant people.
Without a doubt, the reward of a national hero and a hero of the Islamic community is to protect all divine values. Commemorating General Qasem Soleimani is a global face of fighting arrogance and tyranny, glorifying all good things, and declaring hatred and aversion to oppression, arrogance, and domination.
The United States assassinated General Qasem Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, along with deputy commander of Iraq's anti-terror popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas, in a drone strike near the Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. General Soleimani is well known for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq back in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from the terror group.
I have come here to honor General Qasem Soleimani. Although the enemy assassinated him, we are here to show the world that every one of us is Qasem Soleimani. His legacy of resistance will remain for good, and we will continue his path.
General Qasem Soleimani was an international personality and made great achievements in the region. Therefore, not only the Iranian people, but also the people of Iraq, Lebanon, and other countries in the region honor him. He was truly a role model for those who want to fight terrorism and resist arrogant powers.
Iranians believe although the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani put an end to his life, his legacy will continue forever, and he will remain as a role model for all resistance and anti-terror movements.
General Qasem Soleimani's personality was outstanding, not only in terms of decimating Daesh in Iraq and Syria, but also in sending out positive vibes and courage to everyone. It was actually a symbol of international resistance who redefined the rules of leadership. Salman Kujri, Tehran.
Lebanese and Palestinian factions in Lebanon have commemorated the third anniversary of the assassination of Iran's Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas. Mariam Saleh has more from Beirut.
On the third anniversary of the assassination of Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas, Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah stressed that the blood of the martyrs has given the resistance front additional strength.
As a result of this assassination, Iran took even more determined stances, and they did not fear any U.S. threats. We heard high-level stances from the Supreme Leader and the Iranian leaders. We saw a funeral unprecedented in human history, where millions participated, a rebirth of the revolution in Iran, courage in shelling the Ain al-Assad base, and readiness to go to war.
Hezbollah's leader also said that after the assassination, the deal of the century ran into problems, and resistance factions in Palestine gained popularity. He said resistance forces in the entire region have been steadily progressing over the past couple of years. Lebanese and Palestinian factions in Lebanon commemorated the anniversary of the assassination of the two prominent leaders in several events, which will continue throughout the week. The representative of Hezbollah's Christian ally said that the blood of martyrs is what makes the endeavor of the resistance sacred.
Martyr Qasem Soleimani did not represent one specific group or sect or religion. He represents all the oppressed in the world and he supports the primary cause for the entire nation, which is the cause of Palestine.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas noted that it was the direct support and training of General Soleimani that helped the resistance alliance in the entire region reach a state in which it can impose its conditions on the U.S. and Israel and deter their threats.
The resistance alliance and its project does not confront the Zionist entity only. It also targets the colonial scheme of the U.S., which supports the Zionist project. Therefore, when the leader Qasem Soleimani helped strengthen the resistance in the region, he was targeted by the U.S., since he was confronting its massive project. This has transformed the resistance into an extended front facing the bigger project, which targets the region.
General Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, and his Iraqi companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the deputy leader of Iraq's popular mobilization units, were martyred along with several other people in a U.S. drone strike on January 3, 2020.
3 years have passed since the martyrdom of Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, yet for many it is as if it occurred today. For the leaders of the resistance, their martyrdom together seems to have given leverage to a growing regional alliance. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
People in major Pakistani cities have paid tribute to General Qasem Soleimani on his third assassination anniversary. Nasser Kazmi has more in this report.
Like other parts of the Muslim world, people in Pakistan also observed the third anniversary of assassination of General Qasem Soleimani. Special conferences and seminars were held in Pakistan's capital Islamabad to highlight the role of top Iranian commander in fighting terrorism and defending Islam. The participants, including religious scholars, politicians, poets, and rights activists, termed Soleimani a hero of Islam. They said this great martyr gave dignity and honor to Muslims around the world.
Shahid Haj Qasem Soleimani.
By assassinating a great and veteran commander like Soleimani, who fought against terrorism and extremism, the U.S. push made the region vulnerable to conspiracies. Now the region is facing the negative consequences of lacking a capable and committed commander like Soleimani.
The assassination of General Qasem Soleimani by the U.S. was an operation against Islam. Because General Soleimani played a key role in defeating the Daesh Takfiri terrorist groups in West Asia and fought against international criminals.
While expressing sympathy with the Iranian nation, the participants in the ceremonies said General Soleimani set a great example of bravery and courage, which will be remembered by future generations.
General Qasem Soleimani.
The life of Soleimani gives us a lesson that we need unity and solidarity to protect ourselves against conspiracies hatched by the enemies, and that we must stand by the oppressed.
This year, the Iranian embassy in Islamabad and its consulates throughout Pakistan, particularly in Karachi, Quetta, and Lahore, organized various events to pay tribute to the late Iranian commander.
The participation of people from different walks of life in ceremonies to mark the third anniversary of General Soleimani's assassination indicates that he holds a high status in people's hearts and his sacrifice will be remembered in years to come. Nasir Khan, Islamabad.
In an exclusive interview with Press TV, leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, said the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani has enhanced the spirit of resistance in the region.
It is now 3 years since the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani. His murder has actually shocked us with the grief, and we mourn his martyrdom. And after the mourning, of course, we also have occasion to celebrate and even congratulate him. Because he achieved what he wanted, he achieved his goal. We will prepare that he's still alive with us. But he himself prepared to be martyred. He wanted to be a shaheed, and Alhamdulillah, Allah has granted him that. And his funeral showed who he is. Millions of people attended his funeral, and millions of people flocked to his resting place. And you see his pictures all over the places in Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and even in far away Nigeria and other places. And today we also had an occasion to demonstrate in two cities, Abuja and Kano. And the Council Soleimani has trained so many Soleimanis. And these people, by his killing, by his killing, they have succeeded, the enemies succeeded in making all of us Qasem Soleimani. We have all actually lost a colleague and a friend, and indeed someone who injected in us a spirit of resistance.
Russia says the death toll from Ukraine's attack on a building that housed Russian soldiers in Donetsk has risen to 89. The strike in the town of Makivka was carried out on New Year's Eve. It was one of the deadliest strikes in the Ukraine war. The Russian Defense Ministry says massive use of cell phones by soldiers on the night was the main reason for the deadly strike. Ukraine has claimed a far higher casualty figure, saying around 400 died in the strike. Russia had previously said the building was struck by six U.S.-made HIMARS rockets. After the attack, Russian nationalists and some lawmakers demanded punishment for the commanders they accused of ignoring dangers. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has assured Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky that he can count on long-term support of the United Kingdom. The pledge came after the recent Russian drone strikes on Ukraine. On Saturday night, several UAVs struck the capital Kiev and other cities, leaving three people dead and dozens injured. Russia also fired a barrage of missiles at targets across Ukraine on the first night of New Year. Western states, including Britain, have been providing Ukraine with military and financial assistance since the war began in February 2022. Well, in the UK, railway workers have started a five-day strike demanding higher wages amid a cost-of-living crisis.
The government have contacted us late last night, saying that they want to hold some talks next week. But from a period from December the 15th, when I last met the government, they've done nothing. They did nothing in the intervening period. We gave them 3 weeks' notice ahead of this wave of action. They took no measures to broker a deal or to get a settlement, which is really disappointing for us, and I'm sure it's disappointing for the public as well. But the government holds the key to this, and they're not willing to use it at the moment.
The network Rail warned of major disruptions, calling on people to travel only if necessary, as transportation services will be significantly reduced. Railway employees demand a pay rise proportionate to the country's soaring inflation, currently running at nearly 11%. Other transport sectors are also planning walkouts this week. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has, however, pledged to fight calls for inflation-busting rises, insisting the government must stick to more modest pay hikes. For the public sector workers, Britons are witnessing a tightening squeeze on their incomes due to the decade's high inflation. Well, for the first time in a century, U.S. lawmakers have failed to elect a House Speaker as Republicans remain divided over candidates. The House of Representatives adjourned after three failed attempts to elect a Speaker. California lawmaker Kevin McCarthy was unable to earn the support of a simple majority. McCarthy didn't even take a lead in the ballot and could not earn 218 required votes. A standoff could paralyze the House and force the lawmakers to consider another candidate. Former President Donald Trump's allies and hardline Republicans who voted against the GOP favored say they were concerned McCarthy is less deeply invested in cultural wars and partisan rivalries. Republicans flipped the House in their favor with the narrow majority after the 2022 midterm elections. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to Thee, to be joyful in worshipping Thee, to be desirous of Thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me Thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom Thou wilt.
Nurses at 8 local hospitals in New York City have announced a plan to strike in 10 days. The 10-day notice was announced recently by the New York State Nurses Association. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote in this regard, an estimated 16,000 unionized nurses from private hospitals across the New York City metropolitan area announced strike authorizations on Friday, December 31st, 2022, as current contracts are set to expire and the region continues to experience a tridemic health crisis that includes COVID-19, flu, and the respiratory illness known as RSV. The New York State Nurses Association, NYSNAA, issued 10-day notices on Friday, December 31st for strikes to begin on January 9th if contract agreements are not reached at 8 hospitals, including New York Presbyterian, Montefiore, Mount Sinai Hospital, Mount Sinai Morningside and West, Maimon Knights, Bronx Care, Richmond University Medical Center, and Flushing Hospital Medical Center. Nurses at each of the hospitals voted separately on whether their union members would go on a strike, as they called for better caregiver-to-patient ratios, increased benefits, and a sustainable and fair solution to chronic staffing shortages. In a statement, the NYSNA said the notices give hospitals time to plan care for patients while nurses are on strike. But the best way for management to protect patients is to listen to nurses and settle fair contracts that protect patient care in the next 10 days. We're truly struggling, Michelle Gonzalez, a registered nurse and NYSNA member, told local NBC affiliate News 4 outside a hospital in Yonkers recently, adding, "We have been telling the institution that there is not enough of us, that we cannot split ourselves into two people. If we could, we would easily have done that already. This is about our communities," added Vanessa Weldon, another nurse and member of the union, adding, "This is about providing the best patient care to our community." Weldon said the message to management is that we need a fair contract. According to Gonzalez, the strike authorizations at the various hospitals are about making sure the voices of nurses are being heard. She said, "Somebody has to hear us. Somebody needs to understand that we are struggling. This is not going to be sustainable for much longer, and we're only continuing to lose more healthcare workers if action is not taken to improve working conditions and benefits for the nursing staff." Ahead of the vote and Friday, December 31st announcement, NYSNA President Nancy Higgins, BSNRN, said the union does not take the strike threat lightly. "Striking is always a last resort," Higgins said, adding, "but we are prepared to strike if our bosses give us no other option. Nurses have been to hell and back, risking our lives to save our patients throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. Sometimes without the PPE we needed to keep ourselves safe, and too often without enough staff for safe patient care." She added, "Instead of supporting us and acknowledging our work, hospital executives have been fighting against COVID nurse heroes. They have left us with no other choice but to move forward with voting to authorize a strike for better patient care."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Midstream.
Now can be said that Israel has fully invaded Lebanon with espionage. Over the past months, the information division of the Lebanese Internal Security Forces has been active in arresting networks dealing with the Mossad, whose number exceeded 185 as of the date of writing this report. The arrests Lebanon makes continues on an almost daily basis, to a point that this file of spy activity may require 2 years of arrests, and the number of detainees may exceed thousands. The Israeli entity has recruited a huge number of networks to an extent that the Mossad is facing a glut in its network of Lebanese spying agents. The Zionist Mossad has become so saturated with Lebanese spies that it dropped many of those moles at the first mistake they made, as per investigations with agents that the Mossad abandoned after they failed to serve on their very first case. Lebanese security sources revealed that this huge surge of spy activity increased in an unprecedented way with the onset of the economic crisis at the end of 2019. Since then, the Information Division has monitored large movements and contacts of Lebanese citizens from different sects and regions with the enemy. According to the Lebanese authorities, this surge is due to many reasons, the most prominent of which is the economic crisis affecting the lives of the Lebanese, which led to a decline in purchasing power and a decrease in the level of income, damaging the lifestyle to which they were accustomed to before the crisis. This new reality prompted many Lebanese to search for an external source of income in search of fresh U.S. dollars, albeit through online work or in exchange for some services that can be performed to earn a quick buck. Investigations with the detainees indicate that some of them explicitly admitted that they had resorted on their own free will to the Mossad and offered espionage services by communicating with the agency via its official website. Another reason for the surge in spy activity is the lack of job opportunities in Lebanon, which prompted a large segment of young people to look for jobs outside the country. Approximately 1 million citizens uploaded their resumes online during the past 4 years in search for job opportunities without knowing the destination to which they were sent, and most of them were poured into the Mossad database in one way or another. The number of detained spies in Lebanon is considered a record compared to previous years, which many observers interpret as an Israeli exploitation of the economic crisis that has dramatically increased poverty rates in Lebanon, allowing Zionist Israel to recruit traitors at a very cheap cost. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. 170 Israeli networks are under investigation out of thousands estimated by Lebanese security agencies to include more than 10,000 spies on Lebanese soil after Israel monitored more than a million CVs submitted by Lebanese citizens online during the past 3 years under the weight of the dire need for fresh U.S. dollar payments. The economic collapse in Lebanon has taken its toll on the country in many ways, but it seems that it is not the only reason for treason in this Middle Eastern country. Several collaborators admitted that they continued their collaboration with the Mossad out of sheer opposition to their national Lebanese resistance. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert in Zionist affairs and a political commentator. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Hijazi. Now, Lebanon has arrested 185 civilians suspected of working for the Israeli spy agency Mossad since October 2019. That's the year that our country, Lebanon, was battered by a severe economic crisis and financial tragedy. It is truly baffling for me to read these numbers, 185 in 3 years. However, are economic hardships in a country like Lebanon enough reason to betray one's country and to become a spy for the Israeli Mossad? I mean, this is an enemy that has carpet bombed their cities down to rubble many times, and they still want to be spies for Israel.
The economic factor plays a major role in the activity of the Zionist intelligence agencies and the Mossad in specific. The Mossad usually looks for opportunities within the crisis that hit Lebanon in order to recruit spies by presenting them with financial temptations. It does not necessarily have to be clear and direct implication process by the Mossad, but rather an exploitation of the financial hardship and the presentation of offers for different positions for fake companies that claim that they want to conclude work contracts with their new employees, and then they attract citizens who unknowingly apply for the job. The Mossad studies these people and learns about the nature of their work and the nature of their livelihood, and then chooses whomever they find fit to drag them into the quagmire of espionage. Then the occupation resorts to withdrawing information from these people about cases that may at first be normal issues, that do not suggest in any way to those who deal with this firm that they are dealing with the Israeli Mossad. Then the matter develops to further recruiting these people under the pretext of offering financial inducements to benefit from collecting sensitive information. At that point, people might realize that they have been implicated in a foreign intelligence service. They may not know whether it was the Mossad or another security agency. But in some cases, according to what the investigations revealed, some of the citizens discovered that they were dealing with the Zionist Mossad and decided to continue the espionage process. There is no doubt that the Zionist entity is taking advantage of the financial hardship, considering that this issue may provide a fertile ground for recruiting espionage agents. There are always those who might fall and become weak in front of financial temptations and urgent economic needs and dive further into the quagmire of espionage without realizing, in the end, the seriousness of this issue, only to discover after that they have been involved in a serious case that will take them to prison or even get them killed.
Well, Mr. Hijazi, although Lebanon remains technically in a state of war with the Zionist occupation, there has been no direct confrontation between the Lebanese side and the Zionist occupation side since the war in 2006. Nevertheless, Israel's espionage activities in Lebanon keep on just rising. They continue on and never cease. In what ways can that specifically hurt the government and the resistance as well?
The occupation is always in a state of preparation for war. It always considers the issue of collecting information part of its battle, even if the actual military battle is suspended. The occupation is aware of the sensitivity of the Lebanese reality in relation to the occupying entity. There is the force that Hezbollah has built on the political, military, and other levels, which poses a fundamental danger to the occupying entity. The occupation cannot ignore or overlook this critical matter. Israel mobilizes greater skills in order to collect information and learn about what might happen in this arena. Therefore, it may resort to methods to stir up strife and disagreements and strengthen the internal division amongst the Lebanese. This issue has direct effects on the political reality, because it contributes to inflaming public opinion and inciting the Lebanese against one another. We witnessed in the investigations with some of the spies that they were receiving sums of money in exchange for their activity on social media and in exchange for articles they wrote in the press to incite resistance and create a public opinion opposing and hostile to the resistance at home. Without a doubt, this issue has an impact on the political reality and increases the complications for the Lebanese government to get out of the crisis. The resistance is also aware of the sensitivity of this matter and is aware that the occupation is seeking to build a very large bank of targets around its sites and about the method of spreading its sensitive military equipment. Consequently, the resistance resorts to various methods to reduce the size of the penetration of the Zionists into the Lebanese arena and to prevent the occupation from building this bank of targets by blocking intelligence information. Mainly because the occupation greatly benefits from this information in any future war and transforms this information and translates it into targets that they end up striking on land, which often causes human casualties amongst civilians and destroys the Lebanese infrastructure, under the pretext that the occupation has some information about facilities that may belong to the resistance.
But
how would the Lebanese resistance in Lebanon deal with such a growing challenge? I mean, let's say they were able to fixate a spy network. How would they deal with that?
The truth is that these issues are kept secret and we do not receive much information about them in the Lebanese media. However, there is clarity in the existing cooperation between the Resistance Security Service and the official Lebanese security services. There is an attempt to share information to take advantage of all the means available to the resistance in order to pursue these spying networks. There is a permanent and continuous effort to expose these networks and gather information about them in order to monitor any pathway through which the occupation can penetrate the Lebanese reality by recruiting agents, whether through the virtual space, through social media, or through the old traditional means of recruitment. The resistance is present in its capabilities and apparatuses at this level, and it cooperates with the security services in order to combat this phenomenon and pursue spying agents to block the Zionists from gathering information from the Lebanese arena, whether against the resistance or the state or other groups present operating in Lebanon. This cooperation aims to find the kind of mechanism that can mitigate the size of the Zionist penetration into the Lebanese arena.
I want to thank you very much, Mr. Hassan Hijazi, expert in Zionist affairs and political commentator, for joining us to talk about this very pressing matter inside Lebanon and against the Lebanese resistance. Thank you for your contribution. Please stay tuned, because next we will be talking how Jenin is facing Zionist fascism.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts.
The closer the future Israeli government is to seeing light, the higher the level of terrorism and criminality is becoming in the occupied Palestinian territories, which would clearly outline the features of the new phase that the Palestinians are embarking on, which is filled with grim and dangerous challenges. Despite the weight of the massacre committed by the enemy last week in the Jenin camp, which caused grief and anger throughout Palestine, the resistance's insistence on clashing with the occupation and the state of popular support it enjoys, especially in the West Bank, indicate that the coming Israeli breaking waves aggression might not do more than what the first breaking waves had already done. Jenin faces Zionist fascism in this following report.
After a series of assassinations and arrests in Jenin and Nablus, the resistance in both cities is still sticking to its vow and position to continue resisting and confronting the Zionist occupation army with its incursions in the occupied areas of the West Bank.
In the meantime, the resistance groups in the West Bank, especially the Jenin Brigades and the Lion's Den Battalions, are working to develop their military and security activities. Zionist media reported lately that the Palestinian fighters in the West Bank currently possess high-quality rifles, claiming that clashes that were once confined to rock-throwing have now become street gunfights. It was no coincidence that on Thursday, the 8th of December, the Palestinians bid farewell to five martyrs who were killed by the bullets of the occupation on the 35th anniversary of the outbreak of the First Palestinian Intifada. In a day burdened with sadness and anger that the occupied territories lived from north to south following the enemy's massacre in Jenin, which led to the fall of three new martyrs, Ata Shalebi, 46 years old, Tariq Dajem, 29 years old, and Sidqi Zakarne, 29 years old, during armed clashes described as the most violent this year. At the early hours of dawn on Friday, December 9, Zionist occupation patrols accompanied by huge military bulldozers stormed the city of Jenin and its camp from all entrances, occupied many buildings and set up sniper teams on top of them after special forces had infiltrated before them. Following the raid, which the enemy claimed was aimed at arresting one of the resistance fighters involved in the booby trapping of a vehicle that exploded weeks ago and was intended to carry out a commando operation, the resistance fighters engaged in armed clashes, during which they targeted the occupation forces with heavy bullets and homemade explosive devices, according to what was announced by the Martyr Azzedine al-Qassam Brigades and the Jenin Brigade and the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, confirming that direct losses occurred among the enemy soldiers whose cries were heard by Jenin residents, while eyewitnesses confirmed the presence of Israeli ambulances at the site. The enemy's escalation of crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories comes at a time when the racist right-wing government is close to seeing light. The Jenin massacre coincided with the announcement that the Prime Minister-designate Benjamin Netanyahu had reached an agreement with the religious right-wing Shas party to include it in the coalition, in exchange for its president Aryeh Deri taking over the interior and health ministries during the first half of the new government's term and the finance ministry in the second half. Thus, the pillars of the fascist coalition are completed, after Netanyahu also reached an agreement with the far-right religious Zionism party that its leader Bezalel Smotrich would assume the Ministry of Finance for a period of 2 years. This formation reinforces expectations that the occupied territories will witness an explosion that seems inevitable, in light of head of the Otzma Yehudit party, Itamar Ben-Gvir, and Bezalel Smotrich taking over the departments and ministries directly related to the Palestinians.
Now, to discuss this issue with us from Jenin camp is Mr. Mohammad Jradat, political commentator and author. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Mohammad. Now, it was no coincidence that last Thursday the Palestinians actually bid farewell to five martyrs who were killed by the bullets of the Zionist occupation, which coincided with the 35th anniversary of the First Intifada in occupied Palestine. What are the indications of such a fierce confrontation 35 years later?
Assalamu alaikum, yaatikum al-afiyah.
Peace be upon you. These brutal attacks launched by the Israeli occupation on Jenin have gone beyond last week to the present day. Tonight, for example, more martyrs fell successively, the last of which was the 15-year-old child martyr, Jana Zakarni, who was killed by the occupier with seven bullets while she was on the roof of her house during an attack on the Bayadir area in the city of Jenin. This brutal attack, which coincided with the 35th anniversary of the First Intifada, reflects Israel's insistence on eliminating the Palestinian people on the one hand, humiliating them, bringing them to their knees, and cauterizing their consciousness. On the other hand, the Palestinian people, through their available primitive capabilities, spare no effort in inflicting losses to the ranks of the Zionist enemy. On the other hand, the Palestinian people, through their available primitive capabilities, spare no effort in inflicting losses to the ranks of the Zionist enemy. Therefore, with every incursion into Jenin, in particular, and into Nablus, the resistance fighters who are armed with simple automatic rifles and young men carrying their stones are pouring into the streets and into the alleys to confront this fortified Israeli war mechanism, which is protected by drones and helicopters that storm the Palestinian areas to attack them and inflict as many losses as possible. Jenin, a small city in the north of the West Bank, presented more than 80 martyrs during these months. But it is a city in which the Jenin Brigade and young men from the Lions Brigades and Al-Quds Brigades took it upon themselves to restore the glow of resistance in the northern West Bank. Dozens of heroes emerged from among them who rubbed the nose of this occupier with dirt from time to time. This confrontation continues to this day. Today there was a security incident between the Israeli security services and the Jenin battalion, and so the series of confrontation continues until Allah wishes otherwise.
Mr. Muhammad, the enemy's escalation comes at a time when the racist right-wing government led by Benjamin Netanyahu is being prepared to be launched in the Zionist entity. We have seen Netanyahu doing agreements with the right-wing Shas party, the head of the party, Aryeh Deri, and also with other fascist coalition members. How will this be reflected on the Palestinian natives, especially in besieged Jenin right now?
The Shas party, the Jewish Tzatura party, and the Likud party are normal parties in the frequent right-wing fascist Zionist governments. What is new in this brutal coalition formation is the entry of the religious Zionist party with 14 seats in the Zionist Knesset. This development is the master of the situation. For Deri, the leader of Shas, to take over the Ministry of Health and Finance, who was previously arrested several times on the charges of corruption, theft and embezzlement, as are most of the leaders of Shas and Yehudi Tzatura, have been arrested in connection with thefts. It is surprising and strange that Itamar Ben-Gavir and Smotrich became in the first term in charge of the Ministry of Finance and the Civil Judiciary in the West Bank. We are talking about the West Bank security as seen inside the Israeli Ministry of War. Ben-Gavir takes over the Ministry of National Security with an expansion of powers. This very huge development is the master of the situation now, so that Netanyahu, although he appears as a swollen peacock, has become a hostage and captive in the hands of those whom the Israeli Knesset has never included. In 1984, Kahana entered the Knesset and was expelled by Shamir and the Knesset members at the time. But today we see Smotrich and Ben-Gavir entering the Knesset, who are Kahana's students. They call for the death of the Arabs and for the burning of Al-Aqsa Mosque, and they call for all the racist slogans that the Zionist entity has never reached before. Here they are on the Knesset seats and on the seats of active ministries in the government. They control the heartbeat of the Palestinian people, not only in the occupied interior but also in the West Bank. Therefore, this turmoil will undoubtedly be reflected in the development of events in Jenin, Nablus and the West Bank, so that the clash continues and we may even witness a boiling state in the coming months when this unprecedented fascist camp in the history of this entity takes over the military and security field. Today, the Israeli police, which Ben-Gavir will lead, has a military base in the heart of the Israeli army in the south. This means that Ben-Gavir's Al-Yammam unit and the border guard will be more active in the northern part of the West Bank, igniting the region in a broader way. When the Palestinian martyr Ammar was executed a few days ago in the Hawara accident, the criminal Ben-Gavir tweeted and considered that the killing of Ammar was a blessed operation, even though it was a crime that took place in broad daylight in front of the entire world and was, without any doubt, a cold-blooded execution.
Well, in any case, the recent weeks in the West Bank have laid down a very clear equation based on which the Israeli policy in the future will be against the Palestinian natives, that it will depend on more terrorism, just like the operation that you just spoke about right now, the actual execution of a Palestinian in the broad daylight in the streets of occupying Palestine. Will this fact have any implications on the normalizing Arab regimes with the Zionist entity who made the famous or infamous, if I may, Abraham Accord?
The normalizing regimes with the occupation entity have removed all masks from their faces. Recently, the right-wing fascist Zionist parties organized visits to Al-Aqsa Mosque and invited the ambassadors of the countries of the world. The UAE ambassador was actively involved, while the ambassadors of the European Union, for example, abstained. Europe has realized that it is facing a racist political and security development unprecedented in the history of international relations in the region. But the United Arab Emirates, for example, did not realize this. Turkey, in the words of Erdogan, have said that his government congratulated Netanyahu and said that this government is the one that will make peace. Therefore, when we talk about the current countries of normalization, these countries do not care about all these developments inside Palestine. They are countries that look after their own interests, although there are no interests in reality, because there is no real relationship between the Zionist entity and these countries. We have seen the Arab peoples, the Arab teams and the Arab masses at the World Cup in Qatar, how they celebrated and still celebrated the Palestinian flag and the injustice afflicting Palestine, and we saw how they were all hostile to the Israeli presence that overwhelmed Qatar from one end to the other. Therefore, unfortunately, these countries, including Bahrain, received Herzog after the last elections. These countries support these fascist developments within the Israeli camp. So the Arab nation, whether at the level of the region, the Middle East, and the world as a whole, is facing two sides, and there is no third side. Either you are on the side of the Palestinian people, or you are against them. There is no gray area.
Definitely, Mr. Jiradat, there is no gray area when it comes to Palestine. It's either with it or against it, and we know our place very well. We are with the Palestinian people, we are with you, we support you, and we wish you victory against this fascist terrorist entity. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Mohammad Jiradat, political commentator and author, for joining us from Jenin to talk about how Jenin is facing this Zionist fascism. And I want to thank you very much for joining us to talk about very pressing and important matters right here in West Asia. Thank you for always listening to what we have to provide to you. Please stay tuned next week for more from the Middle East Stream. See you again next week. Assalamu alaikum.
In the limelight. The Biden administration on Friday, 30th of December, finalized regulations that protect hundreds of thousands of small streams, wetlands, and other waterways, repealing a Trump-era rule that federal courts had thrown out and that environmentalists said left waterways vulnerable to pollution. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CNBC has covered this story and tells us more. The Biden administration on Friday, 30th of December, issued a rule that defines which types of waterways in the United States will receive federal water quality protections under the 1972 Clean Water Act, repealing a Trump-era rule that federal courts rejected and that environmental groups argued left waterways open to pollution. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and the Department of the Army said the revised rule is based on definitions that were in place before 2015, when the Obama administration sought to expand federal protections. Officials said the rule provides a more durable definition of the waters of the United States that receive federal protection and restores shields for hundreds of thousands of rivers, lakes, streams, wetlands, and other bodies of water. Federally protected waters qualify for government programs focused on maintaining water quality and preventing oil spills, among other things. Environmental groups have long argued that efforts to loosen federal water protections would significantly harm the country's sources of safe drinking water. Farming groups, oil and gas producers, and real estate developers have criticized such regulations as overbearing and burdensome to business, and many supported the 2020 Trump administration rule that attempted to dismantle such protections. Michael Regan, the Environmental Protection Agency's administrator, said in a statement that the agency is working to deliver a durable definition of waters of the United States that safeguards our nation's waters, strengthens economic opportunity, and protects people's health while providing greater certainty for farmers, ranchers, and landowners. The EPA rule applies federal protections to wetlands, tributaries, and other waters that have a solid connection to navigable waters, or if wetlands are relatively permanent. The rule also doesn't impose a certain distance for when adjacent wetlands are protected, as officials said that various factors can affect whether the wetland and the waterway can impact the water quality of each other. The rule includes changes that clarify certain qualifications for waters that are excluded from regulation, such as wetlands that were converted to cropland before 1985, waste treatment centers, and artificially irrigated areas. The Environmental Protection Agency said the rule's definition of waterways will reduce uncertainty from changing regulatory definitions that have harmed communities and our nation's waters. While the nation still has significant work to do to fully protect important waters, it is encouraging to see the country taking a step in the right direction to protect the waters we need for everyone's health and the environment, said John Devine, director of